please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 479. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined today by Nicole Shiro.
Just me.
Just her. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We're streaming live at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air. Please stay with us.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
I had a dream that it is Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. On the show today, Capital T Theater's here with us, talking about their show, The Goat or Who is Sylvia by Edward Albee. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Austin as well. That's twice for Austin. And Oklahoma City. Don't go away.
No sun, unsung, nothing.
Okay, I kind of just want to let that play.
I was like, could you just let this play? That was a great song.
I'm just going to let it sit in the background.
Great song choice.
So that is the great and unfortunately late Aretha Franklin, who
yes.
just passed away this week, who doesn't
what
have any...
What did she do?
She doesn't... not much, but she has no official connection to theater.
I know. Well, she lived it.
She did. She was theatrical. And I loved finding that particular rendition of I Dreamed a Dream from Les Mis, which brought her into the theater family, in my opinion. So she lived a great life. She was, what, 90, 80, 90, 190, something like 80, that?
I think she was 83, 80s.
Whatever. She lived a good life. And I don't know why the one thing
woman.
That comes to me the most with her is her in the Blues Brothers
movie. I was about
movie.
To say, please tell me it's Blues Brother because I cannot. My brother and I have redone that scene 500 times.
I just loved
my
her in that.
Stepfather loved that movie. Yeah. And it was the first words out of my brother's mouth was, well, JJB is up in the sky greeting Aretha to finally meet his woman from his favorite movie.
That's right. Well, checking in with you. How are you doing, Nicole?
I'm good. Went to preseason. Football started. Mama's happy.
Yeah. Good.
It's fall new season of
shows.
Did you
see J.J. Watt? Was he there?
He was there. They didn't put him on the field. Don't want him to get him injured yet. But, I mean, he was there in his uniform and, yeah.
Oh, good. That was important.
And
because did you see Dr. Allen?
He's in the news a lot this week, too, because, you know, it's Harvey a year later, and he did so much.
He did.
For
he
Houston. Did. Love that, JJ. No, Dr. Allen, your cousin was not there this weekend. They were all epic fail with your family. None of them showed up for preseason.
Well, we've got a pretty lousy family. There's nothing good about us.
I sent text and was like, poo-poo on all of you. But that's okay. Yeah. First game of the season is the Giants, and they will be there.
Thank you again for doing a wonderful show last week, along with Tracy Schultz and your friend from Houston, the marketing person from the Alley. What an amazing interview.
Rachel, I know how cool they won the Obie, and it was nice to be able to talk to the Alley. So we had Rachel and Andy Burkowski from next door.
Yep.
Andy hung out with Tracy and I and chatted up the whole hour.
He's a chatter.
We had a good time.
He's a little chatterbox.
We missed you, though.
I know, but I was there in spirit. I'd also like to thank... I did call it for a little second. It was a little crazy. I was in a haunted hotel at the time.
In our nation's capital.
I was at the Omni Shoreham, which
who's
I just...
Who's haunting?
Juliet is her name. She was a maid that was killed in the ghost suite on the 8th floor.
Did you say hello?
No, I said hello.
Juliet.
So, Juliet amongst others. There was a family. It was a family death. There was a couple of people that died in 1919, something like that. Pretty amazing. So I was like, I was trying to call in, but I was too busy being haunted.
I don't know if you were haunted by us or the ghosts.
Kim Simpson, another wonderful... I don't know if you were listening to earlier in his show. He had some song. It was an Irish jig, but in German. Where
love,
did he come up with
I was
things?
About to say, Kim always has some of the greatest music. Because Kim Simpson
he's the greatest.
Is the greatest.
He's like a boxer.
He is.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. I'm Kim Simpson.
That's it.
That doesn't rhyme. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us.
The folks that are staring at us? Like, why did we get ourselves into this?
Yeah, exactly. We have Mark Pickell. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Tim Blackwood, I don't think you've been on the show before, have you?
No, I have not.
Welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
We have a newbie on.
So it's good. And he's so young. You look like you're in your 20s, I'd say.
Well, thank you very much. There's people that heard that just fell over.
I heard them falling over. There was a notable kerchunk.
It's been quite a few decades.
So they say that tragedy and things like that come in threes, but this week I'm afraid they came in fours.
I was about to say it was a lot. Opening up the Broadway briefing today, it felt like it was an obituary email.
Right,
newsletter.
The Broadway briefing showed three of the four, which I'm including Aretha Franklin in.
But it
one
just
of those.
Looked like an obituary newsletter opposed to news of the.
Yep. Well, one was Barbara Harris. She was 83 and she died. She's a Tony Award winner. I did not realize till I read her obituary that she is a founding member of Second City.
Yes, isn't that cool? Yeah. I only knew that.
Tim is nodding. I'll just say that because nodding really doesn't work on the radio.
Okay, yes. She was.
Are you familiar with her work?
No, I just read that in the paper.
I knew that only because the school that I went to in Chicago, our theater department.
Roosevelt University?
No, I went to Columbia.
I'm in Columbia.
But it was off.
I just like to say Roosevelt.
Sheldon Patinkin was one of the members and worked with her, and she actually came into some of our classes and... That's the only reason why I knew. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have known myself.
She won a Tony for The Apple Tree. And then she also won a Tony for something else, On a Clear Day You Can See Forever. And I just want to... I've
not the Harry Connick version.
Not the Harry Connick version, the 1966 version. But I just want folks to hear the comedic genius that is her. Mm-hmm. This is from The Apple Tree. And The Apple Tree, for those of you that don't remember, I mean, you saw it, didn't you, on Broadway in 1963?
I'm only 24.
Yeah, me too.
It's actually three
short plays that sort of hit a theme. One is Mark Twain's... Adam and Eve, and the other one is something
I can't remember them all.
Can't remember the other two, but anyway, because I suck and I really don't know. But anyway, she was in. They were all in all three, along with somebody named Alan Alda. Alan Alda played Adam in the Adam and Eve section. Anyway, this is from the third section, and this is Barbara Harris. She wants to be a movie star, and this is a very talented. Person.
I love this song, by the way.
Who can sing very well. Mm-hmm. So just with that, let's listen to this. Let's not. So we're going to listen to it. I just, it's...
You're just having gremlins in the computer today. Oh, I see. It's like a disco
I'm
show.
I'm not asking much. It's not as if I want to be a rich, beautiful, glamorous movie star. Or even a well-liked, beautiful, glamorous star. I just want to be a beautiful, glamorous movie star. Gloria Jones' sake. A beautiful, glamorous, radiant, ravishing, let's go, movie star.
Okay. I just love that. And there's a video to go along. I mean, you can, when you go to offstageonair.com and you look at her obituary, the Playbill thing shows the video, and the video is quite fun.
Video is quite hilarious. I did a short review, and a friend of mine, Lori Koopman, sang that song. I've always been obsessed with it. It was many years ago, but when you watch the video, Lori made me watch video years ago, and I'm like, man. This is amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And she's a wonderful singer who we will hear once we're done with this section. We're going to play a song from On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, in which she won a Tony.
She sings that ditty too?
She does. She also did a lot of films. So she's really well known for, she did Nashville. She did Family Plot. Freaky Friday? I didn't even realize she was in Freaky Friday? 1976 with Jodie Foster. But may she rest in peace. There was something else I wanted to say, and I can't remember what it was. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody see her live anywhere.
No,
no,
me.
No. All right.
I mean, I may maybe have. I did, and I don't know. Yeah.
I may have. She also did A Thousand Clowns, the film A Thousand Clowns, which was one of the first. I think I did props on A Thousand Clowns in 1972, I think, in a production in Houston. Anyway. That's all there is to that. So the other person, or one of the other people that passed away. Now, all these people passed away at a ripe old age, with the exception of our last person. So all of these people, Barbara Harris was 83. And Vivian Madelon is the next one, who I have not heard that name in so long when I saw the obituary, because Vivian Madelon is a Broadway director, and he was very active around the time that I was doing Broadway work in the early 80s. And I hadn't heard his name in forever, and then I saw that he passed away as well. Probably the most well-known, and you might need to be a New Yorker to even know it, is the Tap Dance Kid. With, what's his name?
Savian.
No.
Carlton.
Yeah. Anyway, come up with him.
I'm giving him. You his character name.
Yep. Well, let's not worry about it. Let's just move on. It'll come to us.
I can see him doing his thing.
But he passed away, and he did a lot of Noel Coward. He worked with Noel Coward an awful lot. And he said it was very interesting to work with him as an actor versus a writer. He said because he wasn't used to taking orders from anybody. And one, if I can find this quote, because it was actually pretty funny. Yeah, he would say whenever he'd get a note from him, Noel Coward would respond something like, I don't agree, dear. Let me try it. And he would do it in one sentence. So I thought that was
sounds nice. Like my cast. Yeah.
True. And we're going to talk about your cast. I think that they are, all of them, as I see them, are quite headstrong. Mm. he also it looks like he was a performer in The Iceman Cometh in 1958, the year of my birth. Thank you. Happy birthday to me. Iceman Cometh is Eugene O'Neill, in case anybody wanted to know. He was born in England.
England.
Died in the United States. I think that's it with Vivian Madelon. I think I love his name. I just have to say that.
It's a great name.
Uh-oh. He did. Your favorite. I just saw this. He had, in Broadway in 1980, he had three shows running at the same time. One was Mornings at 7, which he's very well known for doing. Another one was American Clock, which I don't know that show. Either of you know that show?
No. Arthur Miller?
Is it Arthur Miller? Arthur Miller?
American Clock? It's Arthur Miller.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
One of his later ones.
But at the same time, he did Brigadoon.
I was like, let me guess. Was it Brigadoon, my favorite show?
He did Brigadoon.
It's the town that can stay in the fog.
Yeah. But anyway.
For 100 years.
Rest in peace, Vivian Madelon. And the last
it's one, driving me nuts. I can't. Dooley Hill was the guy who took over. But who played Carlton Fresh Prince?
I don't know.
Alfonso Ribeiro? No.
No, it's the guy, the person that did the Tap Dance Kid was, I forgot.
Anyway. Dooley Hill took over the role later, but oh my gosh. It's
let's not worry about it. Let's talk about the last person that passed away, which is Brian Murray, and not Brian Doyle Murray, to be specific, which is what I thought when I first saw it. But this Brian Murray, he was a member of the Royal Shakespeare Company. He was the original Rosencrantz in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern
Rosencrantz
Are Dead.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Tom Stoppard's show, and he passed away. He was also in his 80s. Who am I thinking of that died in their 70s? It must have been...
We had a big producer pass away.
Yeah,
it was
a producer. Yeah,
hours.
That's the one we're going to talk about. And he died unexpectedly from shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
Sorry. We're going to get to him in a second.
Going to be producing Hair, the upcoming...
He was.
Hair Live.
He was. I am always amazed at how well-read you are.
Dun dun dun!
I actually met him once.
Did you?
Yes.
The producer we're talking about?
Brian Murray.
Brian Murray. Oh, you did. Tell us about that.
Oh well, my wife was the costume mistress. She was an intern in New York on a show that he was doing, and I got to meet him.
That's pretty cool.
How was he?
Very nice.
Did you have
a
chat with him?
Not really.
Not really. Just because I was going to ask if you talked about me at all.
I got what the costume mistress's boyfriend would get.
How's that? Well, that's good. What theater was it in?
I'm not going to remember any of that. I know it was down in the Village somewhere, but okay. I don't know exactly which
he
one.
He did do a lot of off-Broadway stuff, which was off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway. So he did a lot of that stuff.
I think the show was The Entertainer or something like that.
Dun, 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 dun. So extra points if you can tell me the person that made the, Archie, whatever the character's name, Archie, famous in the original Entertainer. And I think in the film. Extra credit. Anybody?
No, don't know. Tell me.
Somebody named Laurence Olivier.
No way.
True.
Yeah. That's a good trivia question.
True, true.
That's a really good trivia question.
Yeah, I think. Larry?
Larry. As a matter of fact, that's what his friends called him. And I have asked this question on here before, but I'll just see because this is new people. Who has an autograph, a personal autograph from Laurence Olivier? Oh, just me?
Just you.
I was waiting for it to come. I'm like, how did we escape over that? Oh, we didn't.
So he also did a production of Edward Albee's The Play About the Baby.
Oh.
And he played Man. Which is one of my, I did that show at my old theater, which I had so much fun doing it.
I was about to say, crazy. You had fun doing that one.
Yeah, he was alongside of Kathleen Early. I'm sorry, Marion Seldes. Kathleen Early played Girl. So, may he rest in peace. And the fifth person to pass away is the producer Craig Zadon, who's known for doing a lot of musicals to TV and film. So most notably, Chicago.
Chicago. I was like, he was the big guy.
He also did Hairspray and Gypsy, starring Bette Midler. Was there a film of that?
Oh, I have the DVD. I'll let you borrow it. There's some good stuff. Cynthia Gibb plays Gypsy Rosalie.
Yeah. He also did Smash, the musical.
Yes.
So
I will lend you Gypsy. You've never seen
it. Thank you. And as noted, he was doing the upcoming Hair. And I guess he won't be anymore.
Lisa.
He also produced the revivals of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying with Matthew Broderick. Mm-hmm.
What's her name? And our old co-host Nick Mayo was in that.
He was. I did not know that.
Yes, because he did it with Harry Potter. Because Harry Potter took over.
Oh, that's right. He did take it over. Was he in the original?
No, that was the next version.
That was the second. Oh, wait. This may be the one. 2011.
Yeah, that's the one.
So the Matthew Broderick one was even earlier.
That was early 90s, early 2000s.
And he also did the 2010 Promises.
Yeah, Nick Mayo was in the 2011. Well, that's funny.
Yeah. Nick Mayo was in Promises, Promises?
No, How to Succeed.
Okay. Well, because I know how to succeed.
No, Promises, Promises. That's Kate Finneran won the Tony for that. And then she played her Miss Hannigan and Annie exactly like she did.
So amazingly, we talked about this on the show a few weeks ago. He was also the one that was going to bring a new musical adaptation of Some Like It Hot.
Yes.
To Broadway. Yes. And I'm still torn? No, I'm upset because Sugar, which is one of the first commercial shows I ever did, is a musical adaptation of...
Something Like It Hot.
And I did the production. As a matter of fact, I'm working next month with the director, Andy Bew, who directed that production of Sugar with Larry Kurt and Bobby Morris with the teeth and Don Ameche.
Okay.
Actually, I think is Bobby Morris still alive?
Robert Morris is still alive. Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of How
to
Succeed.
So Larry's passed away.
You brought it right
Don
back
Amici's
to How to Succeed, too.
I did.
How about them apples
I did.
The Robert Morris? Yeah.
All right. So I think we're done with the deaths. Are we good with that? Can we move on to life?
Should we have a moment of silence?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay.
Okay. And you know, every moment of silence needs one of these. Okay.
It was like you made it a crime section, but it wasn't. I did, but that's
but it
okay.
Wasn't. All right, so New York Times had some interesting articles, and one of them is this, the headline is, "In This Oklahoma, She Loves Her and He Loves Him." So this is an article talking about the Rodgers and Hammerstein organization and the interesting ways people are doing their work, specifically Oklahoma, and then others as well. And Ted Chapin, who operates the Oscar Hammerstein estate. Well, it's not the estate. It's now owned by a Dutch company. I have to find it in here, but it's not the Oscar and Hammerstein family doesn't own the rights anymore. They sold it to some conglomerate, but this guy is still the person that makes the decision. So
Beatles don't own their music. So exact same
that's
kind
true.
Of thing.
So Bill Rausch of the, what company is he with? It's in Ashland, Oregon. The Oregon Shakespeare Festival he had this dream of doing a Oklahoma with Women and women. So Lori and Curly are women. Mm-hmm. And what's the other guy?
Ado Annie.
Yeah, but not Ado Annie. What's
Judd?
No, not Judd. Who's the
guy? I was like the other guy. Oh, it's gonna be
in here.
I know.
Ado Annie, Will Parker.
Will Parker, yeah.
And Ado Andy.
That's right. I was like, he made it Andy, right?
And Aunt Eller is transgender. And so he had this, he was sitting next to, so Bill Rausch, who works at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, was sitting next to, what's his name? I just said his name. Ted Chapin. And pitched him this idea about doing a same-sex version of Oklahoma. And Ted Chapin said, okay.
You really?
The audience couldn't see that, but that was
kind of surprised. That's why I was like, you really surprised?
Well, not after reading this article. So this article is really interesting. So Oklahoma and all these King and I and all these Rodgers and Hammerstein shows of that era were really groundbreaking at the time.
Yeah.
They were doing stuff that hasn't been done. They're the Hamilton and the Rent of their day, which I, you know, after I grew up, that these were the things that were always playing. This is what high schools did. And guess, okay, here's from extra credit. How many productions get the rights to Oklahoma each year? I gotta hopefully get the right number.
World? Are we talking world, US?
Yeah, world or US. Everything. How many productions get
thousands of them?
I would guess, yeah, somewhere around,
I think,
1,000.
No, it's 500, which seemed a lot to me. Per year. Yeah.
I was going to say 500, actually.
Yeah, so Tim would have won. Without going over.
I was just about to say the Showcase Showdown. You did not go over.
No, I would have guessed exactly 500.
So anyway, this is playing right now at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And then there's also a all-African-American version of Oklahoma at St. Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn.
I was about to say.
No, not St. Anne's. No, in St. Anne's, Brooklyn is a dark version. It's like where they have a lot of violence and stuff like that. And they actually did one of the things that the estate said no to was a explicit murder on stage. They said no to that, but everything else they've said pretty much yes to. I think that's interesting. That's it. It's the whole story.
Jazz hands.
Judd gets killed off stage, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Poor Judd is dead.
They wanted a splatter zone like American Psycho. Nice. And they said, no.
I played Judd, actually.
Did you?
Yeah,
I did. Summer Stock. I would either want to play Ado Annie or Judd.
It's fun. Mm.
Judd's a great job. And, I mean, he is bullied and harassed. I mean,
he's misunderstood.
As an evil character, he is. I mean, he doesn't. His reactions aren't
misunderstood stalker.
And you get to miss the last quarter of the play. You can get out of costume, and
that's true. You can go have a beer
in the green
down
room.
The street.
Yeah,
have a beer in the street.
Did I say that it was owned by a Dutch company? Because if I said that, I was correct. It was indeed a Dutch company. So I think that's it. And then they talk about how this isn't a gimmick, and I don't believe it is. But I think it's great that the estate and the organization that owns the rights are allowing these things to happen.
Yeah, you don't hear stories like that.
Mm-mm. You don't.
You don't. You really don't.
You don't. And I think it's kind of a brave thing. It's interesting. If you go to offstageonair.com and click the link for this story and look at the comments, it's kind of sad to see the comments, because you can imagine what they are and how sick the American theater is for showing this stuff. And quite literally, there was one religious person in the audience on the first night that made a very big stink of having to get up out of his seat to throw up when he saw two men kissing. Mm-hmm. And the director was worried, well, that's the way that it's going to go, but clearly it didn't. But it's interesting to see the comments, and I wish that people would understand that the world is changing and they can't hunker in and stay right where it is.
You know, you could come out with a new type of tissue and you could go below and read the comments and it still is about religion. I'm like, it's a new tissue.
Yes.
So it's just the state of it's sad.
Well, you know what
people...
I say.
Achoo!
Tissue, I hardly know you. Okay, how do we feel about Beetlejuice the musical?
I don't, but I saw the casting.
That's Alex Brightman mm-hmm. and Sophia Ann Caruso. But I don't know how I feel about it either.
I know. It's like, why? But again, you know.
Is this the Alex Timbers? Yes, this is the Alex Timbers.
It's Alex Timbers. It's a great group of people behind it. I just, you know, I don't know. You and I are excited about Dave, but I have this
thing about Dave.
And I loved School of Rock, which Alex Brightman starred in. But I'm kind of like, would you please stop with the movies to the musicals? Like, every single one does not need to be made.
Well, speaking of that, let's talk about Pretty Woman.
Again, why? But well, it's breaking these box office records. Did you hear? I mean, you didn't hear last week. We were talking about it. It broke records. Most seats sold before a show had even been open monetarily.
Well, but if
again,
if
why?
Every single critic has anything to say about it, that won't last long.
No, I, well,
so
I watched the one number and text Nick Mayo. Pretty Woman, pretty awful. I would want my money back. I tried watching more. I watched four songs, and it was the most painful thing I've ever seen. And I love Andy Carl.
So why? It says, Pretty Woman the musical, this is Ben Brantley's review, lowers the already ground-scraping bar for literal-minded adaptations of film to stage.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
And
Brian Adams wrote the music.
What he says here is that this show took the movie and did it basically word for word.
Yes.
And what made that movie palatable was Julia Roberts. And it was really about her stardom. And other than that, it's sort of a sexist tale about hookers and
listen, Samantha Barks isn't good. She's squealing out the numbers and they don't sound good. It's painful. It's so painful.
It says it was directed in. I don't know why, like, really bad reviews are so much fun to read.
Because they're mean.
But they're kind of,
and it
they're
makes
mean.
You feel good,
but directed
mean.
And choreographed as if.
But it's mean because you're like, it wasn't my show.
Exactly.
It says it was directed and choreographed as if an automatic pilot by Jerry Mitchell. And this is kind of funny. I just found this kind of funny writing. Instead of retailoring Vivian to Miss Bark's specific talents, the creative team has chosen to play up the narrative's Twinkie fairy tale aspects, which can be summed up in the lyric, "If you don't have a dream, how are you going to have a dream come true?" Oops, that's Happy Talk from South Pacific.
Yeah,
I thought that was funny. So other notable critics said, my favorite, Charles Isherwood, said, please, can someone rescue Andy Carl from Broadway's Multiplex Hell?
Have I been saying? He is one of the most talented guys. Stop doing musicals or bad movies. Okay, Rocky was good, though. We'll let him off for Rocky.
Timeout's Adam Feldman said, the show has no reason to exist beyond, one assumes, a desire to make money by pimping out a familiar property.
I don't think Brian Adams is going to be writing musicals anymore. And he may go back to the summer of 69.
Vulture's Sarah Haldren said, and Pretty Woman, with its production team that features only two women, the makeup designer and an associate producer, is both built on an old structure and, despite those girl power marketing objectives, suffused with old ideas. I do find it interesting that a property like this has two women and they're not in major
roles. What's interesting is, like, a month ago there was an article about how all these plays that are not really great for women, like My Fair Lady and all these, and how they've changed the script, and they talked about how they were changing it up for Pretty Woman. What did you change up? You changed nothing, and you didn't hire women.
True.
So, again, it's setting. I don't know.
Okay. Well, it's not anymore. Box office has come way down from pre-sales.
Yeah.
So it's gonna change, but it's survived. Nobody thought that Bronx Tale would survive, and it's still there.
I thought Bronx Tale had a way better chance. Maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, let's listen to Barbara Harris from On a Clear Day. We can hear forever.
Come see the sights, said he. New York.
We have returned. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Nicole Shiro.
Yeah, we're going to have to come up with a new theme
song for
you. I
know, because I there's maybe. No Nick Squared. I can't say
just
all the mail.
Just Nicole. All
right. Just me.
Think of that.
Just me.
We've been having lovely discussions with Mark Bickell and Tim Blackwood. And now we're going to switch. Oh, before we switch to that, it is 1:30, so it's time for our random legal ID.
Dun, 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 dun,
who could be? I found it interesting that last...
We had a lot of South Pacific.
Last week you did South Pacific. That's 2 weeks in a row for
I
that.
I know,
so
let's hope it's not South Pacific.
Let's hope it is not South Pacific. Let's see what it
is. Let's hear who it is.
Hi, I'm former Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on Austin's KOOP 91.7 FM.
Barney Frank, that's apropos since we were talking about LGBT stuff.
Yeah,
LGBT,
I was about to say, I don't
stuff.
Think we've had him on and heard that in a long time. Well, it wasn't South Pacific. It was Barney Frank. It Thanks, Barney.
All right. You guys over at Capital T are doing one of my favorite Edward Albee plays, The Goat, or Who is Sylvia? Or as I like to say, Who's Sylvia?
Who's Sylvia? Yeah, yeah. We are. Yeah, we've been working on it.
We're Tell excited. Us about it.
Well, it opens tomorrow. So they're at Hyde Park Theater, and we've got a great cast, or I think they're pretty great. Rebecca Robinson.
Heard of her.
Robert Pearson.
Heard of him.
Tim Blackwood, and a newcomer, Preston Roos. We're having a lot of fun and breaking some stuff. And
well, let's talk about this show. So the title would assume that there might be a goat involved. Is there? But it's also Edward Albee, so you never know really what's gonna be.
There's a goat involved.
There's a goat involved.
Definitely a goat involved. Yeah, yeah. I think he's pretty explicit. I did think about the title, and he probably could have chosen a different title that. Might be more palatable.
Well, I believe it's tempered by Or Who is Sylvia, which makes it
gives it some mystery.
But it's not really a mystery because it's actually on your website, so we can say who Sylvia is, can't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah, no.
Who's
no.
Sylvia?
She's a goat. Yeah, that Martin, a 50-year-old architect, happens to fall in love with.
Right, he's going through a midlife crisis by falling in love with a goat.
He is, yeah.
Cabrito all around.
We thought about that. Yeah. Yeah.
What would Martin have done with goat yoga being all the rage these days?
Oh, that's true.
We thought about doing a side thing with goat yoga.
You know, that makes Martin a little complex there.
He's already pretty complex.
I know. Who knew?
So now the story itself, so usually, you know, theater is when something happens. So we know that he's in love with a goat. What can people look forward to seeing in the play? Does the goat show up?
The goat will make an appearance. It's one of my favorite Albies as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also pretty interesting to me when you look at careers of playwrights, the fact that he was writing at that level late in his career, you don't see that.
2003, 2002?
Three, I believe.
Three. Yeah. Well, no, it won the Tony in 2002.
Okay.
So he must have written it before it won the Tony.
Must have written it beforehand.
He was 70?
You don't see that with like Miller or Tennessee Williams, mm-hmm. You know, you kind of see a downslide in their productivity, I guess. Not productivity, but, you know, the quality or whether it's relevant. And I feel like Albee was able to continue to tell a story that's pretty relevant to modern audiences. It really appealed to me. I think it's really challenging for an audience. I love making shows that are challenging for audiences.
It's challenging, and yet it's not as challenging as some of his other pieces.
Right.
Then if I'm remembering it correctly, it's got a narrative that you can follow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's a simple story about a family who's mm-hmm. just kind of.
Is it an old mountaineer? Barely kept his family.
I just went
to the Beverly Hillbillies.
You did. Yeah.
I was just like, where are you now?
No, he's kind of a posh architect.
I apologize.
Black Gold, Texas Tea.
Yeah, I got you. All of those things.
But yeah, it's a pretty simple family format, I would say, and mm-hmm. it's really funny as well. I think, and I think that would surprise a lot of people, given the subject matter. Those two things always appeal to me. If it's funny and it's challenging in some way to an audience, that always makes me kind of interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Tim, what role are you playing? Are you playing Martin?
No, I play Martin's friend Ross.
Ross.
Yeah, so I'm kind of the one who discovers what Martin's doing and then mm-hmm. alerts the world or his wife.
And have you done a lot of Albee work before?
I have not.
Yeah. So how is this experience for you then?
Because it's great.
Kind of different.
No, it's very different. It's very different. I enjoy working with Mark and the rest of the cast quite a bit. Very talented group of folks. So.
Yeah. So did we went through the no we did go through the cast. So Robert Pearson then plays Martin, mm-hmm. and Rebecca Robinson plays
Stevie.
And this is the second time around for Rebecca doing this role that I know.
It is. And when I approached her about it, she jumped at it. She loves playing that role. And it's really clear. There's three scenes in the play. And the second scene is really a tour de force for that character. Mm-hmm. And I always tease Rebecca because I tell her she's a sandbagger because all of a sudden you get an audience and all of a sudden she like turns on and you see stuff you never saw before.
Right.
Well, this is different and I've worked with her probably 4 or 5 times now. And I think this show is very different. You can tell she just loves that second scene and playing in that role. You can see why she jumped back in. So yeah.
There are some roles that are really, really fun to play that Albie wrote. I did a production of the play about the baby and mm-hmm. played the woman. And I had so much fun doing it because there's a lot of freedom that he writes.
I was like, it's the way he writes that the characters are so specific, but yet there's a freedom and interpretation almost.
And yet there's no freedom. You cannot change a syllable of his work.
Exactly.
No, he's pretty specific about that. And, you know, the other thing is he writes like great women. Like he writes great. I mean, he's throughout his whole career. Mm-hmm. And this is no doubt a great role as well. But yeah, it's she really every night. Even in rehearsals, she's not sandbagging very much. So
what was it about this play at this time that capital T, a.k.a. you, decided to do this piece?
I love this play when it came out. And it was produced here in Austin before me. And so I felt like, oh, I can't do it. It's always been kind of on the back burner of something I'd really want to work on and kind of dive into. And so I felt like enough time had passed since the last production. I think it has interesting things to say about sexuality and love, mm-hmm. In the current climate, you know, how we arrive at these different moral destinations about, you know, what's right and wrong. And, you know, interesting things that I found looking at this play is, you know, I think up until about 2003 or 2005, maybe it was, mm-hmm. you could be imprisoned for having a sexual relationship with someone else in Texas. And there still is not a law that explicitly would send you to jail for bestiality in Texas and 7 other states.
Oh, really?
I was going to say, it's a few other states, isn't it?
They're all in the South. They're all in the South.
Amazingly enough. Well, that's interesting because there are still laws on the book against sodomy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even though the Supreme Court reversed that, they have kept that law on the books here in Texas.
Yes. And there's some animal cruelty statutes that probably get you in trouble, but there's nothing. A lot of states have explicit bestiality statutes.
Right. Yes. Those people have been in the news a lot lately.
Yeah.
In these other states.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyways, I do think it has a lot to say, even, you know, is it about 15 years later now than when he wrote it? Still pretty relevant with our current climate and kind of, our society exploring sexuality and what it means and what's love, what's, you know, where's that line between love and sex and those kinds of things. So,
and did you, in approaching it, you and all to either of you in terms mm-hmm. of, you as a director, you as a cast member, did you approach it in any kind of unique way, or are you really sort of letting this text speak for itself along with your action?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a unique approach to it. No, I wouldn't say like I'm trying to put some kind of stamp on it. I'm really trying to honor the work that he did. It's mm-hmm. really well written. It's one of those. It's kind of like catching a really nice wave.
Don't I know it?
You just jump on it.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It's very easy to go into the characters because it is so well written and, you know, so it flows very well.
And so witty, very funny. He's a wordsmith.
Right. And if I remember again, it's paced well too. I mean, it's a pretty fast paced.
Yeah. Piece. And I,
it's not Pinter.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's rat-a-tat-tat.
We should have had the video camera. I mean, we were all laughing, but the faces that were made at the same time.
Yeah, so, and I think, you know, the other thing that appeals to me a little bit is it also has this kind of classical format, tragic mm-hmm. format of like the Greeks and kind of unimaginable things that are taking place that we're going to witness, you know, over the course of an hour and 40 minutes and have a little catharsis at the end. So I think it's dynamic because it's funny and also really cuts really hard, I think, at the same time. So sure. I like those.
Who are some of the other creatives involved?
Let's see. The set designer's named Mark Bickell.
Heard of him.
Yep. And
he's a hack.
He is a hack. You don't really want to trust him alone in your theater.
Why don't you try to call him and see if we can get his opinion?
He phoned it in this time. No,
a lot
no.
of plywood.
Yeah.
Not much else.
Plywood.
Do you design a lot
foil.
Of sets? I know that you designed the set that you did in our theater, in Ground Floor Theater.
I do, yeah. Once some of the preeminent designers left town, uh-huh. or, you know, I worked with Paul Davis and EO a lot. And once they left, there was kind of a big talent gap. And so I just kind of tried to fill it myself. Cool. So, yeah. Patrick Anthony is doing lights. He's wonderful. Yes. And Lowell Bartholomew is doing our sound. And we have a wonderful costumer.
What does not Lowell Bartholomew do?
I was going to say, Lowell's everywhere.
Yeah.
Who's doing your costumes?
Cheryl Painter. She does all our costumes. Pretty much. I mean, we've had a few here and there of different people, but she's... she teaches there at Pflugerville High School. And so
awesome. I call it Puff Pflugerville.
Puff Pflugerville.
Puff Pflugerville.
And we have a real 17, well, he's now 18, a real 18-year-old in our 18. Play.
No, so, Mazel tov.
Yeah, we're really
excited. He's very good. Preston is very, very good.
We're really excited to have him.
And he's new to Capital T?
He is, yeah. Yeah, he is. Okay. He's actually one of the costumers, one of her students.
Oh, cool. So up in Puff Pflugerville.
From Puff Pflugerville.
Which everybody that listens to this show knows that I keep my dog up there when I'm gone.
Oh.
Which is very apropos to our conversation.
Sophie will have a lot to say this afternoon.
I actually had a great question that just totally escaped my mind. But I know it's gone, but it was a good one. I just want to go on record as saying that. What's next for Capital T after this?
In October, we're gearing up. We're going to actually go do another kind of I don't think the goat's classic yet, but we're going to do Endgame by Beckett.
Oh.
And so we're going to have a lot of fun with that.
That's another fun one.
Yeah. Mark's Dark Period. Yeah.
So you open the goat, or who is Sylvia, tomorrow.
Correct.
At Hyde Park Theater.
That's right.
And how long do you play?
It runs for 4 weeks through the September 15th.
September 15th. Yes. And where can folks go to get more information?
You can get more information at capitalt.org. That's capitalt.
Yeah, it's the city, not the building.
The area, not the building.
It's not the building.
Versus A.
Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank
we
you
really,
for having
you
know, us.
We
really
appreciate you taking the time. Okay, so that was Mark Bakel and Tim Blackwood of Capital T's production of The Goat, or Who is Sylvia, by Edward Albee. It's playing at the Hyde Park Theater starting tomorrow, August 23rd through September 15th. For more information, capitalt.org. We'll be right back.
Don't be afraid of an animal.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Nicole, it's me. I'm Nicole.
How to succeed at Nicole. So listen, before we get into the local stuff, I want to talk about a couple things that I didn't talk about earlier that...
What things?
Tell
me, Lisa.
First of all, Jerry Springer, the opera, is coming to Broadway.
You are so obsessed with this Jerry Springer.
Well, I just was saying that. But I also wanted to tell, there's two other things that I want to talk about. One is an organization that I became a member of when it first started back in, but this was probably 1980, a little association called the SMA, the Stage Managers Association. Hmm. And we had a little...
How many people were there when you started?
Not that many. We had a little, what do you call it when you send things out? A flyer, leaflet, newsletter. Mm-hmm. And it had a little, the
headset.
Old school headset back when we went. Anyway, it's now like 40 years old and doing quite well. And they have a huge ceremony, and it's a pretty big organization. And on September 17th, they will be having their big award ceremony.
Are they honoring you?
No, but they are. They are.
Damn them.
Honoring Roy Harris, and it's the Del Hughes Award, so for Lifetime Achievement. I just think that's really great.
That is cool.
That stage managers are becoming a little bit more visible, at least within the business. I've always said that you never know a good stage manager because a good stage manager is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice that within the industry we're able to recognize some of the better ones.
Stage manager and swings, they're the two fascinating components.
So here's another thing I want to talk about, and this will be great to get your opinion on, Mark, which I saw this ad, this article that came out this week. The National Theatre in London commits to telling every actor that auditions for them yes or no, which is something I've always done, and I think it's a good idea to do. Do you typically, when you hold auditions, do you tell people that they didn't get?
Do you tell the
no people? Let me tell you. It's hit or miss with me. I don't know. I have and I haven't. It goes both ways. And I've gotten burned by not doing it.
Mm.
So I try to do it. I try to do it, but it is one of those things for me that is always, it's always a tough.
It's hard.
It's tough. How do you, for me, it's like, how do you write that? How do you, you know, I've gotten better at it though, I think.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that when we did Gibberish Mostly, I just, I never got around to it. I just, it wasn't, and I felt bad. And after a certain amount of time, it's just,
you're like, now I feel like I'm an afterthought.
Cause you get your cast, and you're really excited because you've cast them and you're working on like getting stuff moving. And then you have this other business that's still sitting there and you're like, oh, I'll get to it. And then it gets to, like you said, it's too much time passes.
But I did do this last time. We just did some casting and I did take the email addresses for all the people that did not get in.
Right.
Sent an email out, BCC, and said, yeah, thanks for auditioning. The show is cast. We really hope that you audition for us again in the future. Sent that out. Basically,
simple.
Just like that.
Just needs to be simple.
A few people didn't get it. So I did get a handful of emails that said, does that mean I'm not in the show? And I went, then I had to go and say, yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah.
But I think it's... I think it's the least that we as producers or directors can do, or at least attempt to do. I understand I'm as guilty as others for not doing it.
As an actor, it makes me go, oh, they did remember me and they took that time out instead of, you know, not getting, normally I don't hear it. Well, that's nice. It makes you want to audition or work with that person or be associated again. But I do think the email was clear.
But you know, sometimes you send out those emails and you'll get responses that are like, hey, well, you know, can you tell me about my audition? And that gets awkward too, right? When people want some kind of like professional feedback on what they did, when, you know, it might just be the case that they just didn't work for that role.
Which is an honest and complete answer as far as I'm concerned. But the other thing is, if you are someone that's asking for feedback, then if I'm that person asking for feedback, I have to be prepared for whatever that answer comes back to
Absolutely.
Me. It's like, I never ask people that come to see my shows, what did you think of it? Unless I really want to know.
Because they'll tell you.
They'll tell me. And I think that they should. If I ask the question, tell me your honest answer. But I think it's interesting that the National Theater has always done this, or they've been doing it for a while, but they finally put it into
policy,
which I think is sort of cool. And I, you know, I might do that for us in my theater's policy, because I think it's a good thing to do.
I think, Well, I mean, I think people want to know mostly whether to, because you just hang on, you know, you're like, oh, maybe they're still considering me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you see the announcement and you're like, oh, I guess not.
Yeah. And you know, the casting process, can be lengthy.
Yeah.
So there have been instances where I forgot what show it was that we couldn't find someone and we were holding on to our
correct.
Some people that we said, I'm still looking, but if I don't find exactly what I want, this other person will do a fine job. Yeah. And sometimes that can go on for
a
while.
Speaking of stage managers, I'm most successful when the stage manager takes on that role for me.
And it's the communication.
That's helpful. Yep.
Okay, let's switch over to local stuff. I've got some interesting things.
It's a great way to have it handled, to be honest with you. Stage manager, they are that person of information.
Right.
It's not anything you know, that's your,
right, they're
your
just
information
a messenger.
And yeah, they're not.
Sure.
Yeah, they're interesting. Interesting.
Okay. So this is a show that's coming in here August 24th through September 1st. It's called Schadenfreude, an evening of one-act plays by Cold Frame Collective. Now, I've never heard of Cold Frame Collective. Have either of you?
Nope.
I Googled it and got this crazy video company, which was really sort of cool, but it turns out that's a video company out of California. Not this one. So this is a new company. So this is 2 1 acts. One is The Actor's Nightmare, Christopher Durang, and the other one is Waiting by who? The Coen brothers. Is that right?
Yeah, anyway, I believe it is.
So it is directed by Audrey Barrett, produced by Carolyn Bobbitt. It's with Brandon Hood, Marley Graham, Kel Sanders, Mary Mirion, and Catherine Lane. None of these people I know.
Where is it being presented?
Catherine Lane.
It is being presented at, where is it? Wait, stand by. No, the Arts and Real, the old Arts and Real, the Center Stage Black Box.
Okay.
So for more information, Brown Paper Tickets is what I could do. A search for Schadenfreude Brown Paper Tickets. Or Now Playing Austin was down today for some reason.
Oh, so, it's up now because okay. I was just on there 2 minutes ago.
So that's good. I also have
technical difficulties are now over.
I have to say that this is the last weekend for Ground Floor Theater's production of There and Back.
Yes,
heard some nice things.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing piece. Patty Neftiven did a great job directing it. The cast is incredible.
Set looks awesome.
The set looks beautiful.
And you've had full houses.
We've had full houses. So information at groundfloortheater.org. And the last little Ground Floor Theater thing I'll say is tonight is the last night for the 1 Minute Play Festival put on by Scriptworks. And it's being done at Ground Floor Theater. And if you've not seen any of these, the 1 Minute Play, the 10 Minute Play, all these things are so much fun.
Yeah.
I find the 1 Minute Play Festival really fun.
I was about
fun.
To say, isn't this your favorite one?
Well, because it amazes me how much some playwrights can say in 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's and true. And how hard it is, but how clear the message is.
I guess there's some 60 plays presented. Actually, that's 60 and 60. But there's somewhere around 50 or 60 plays that are presented. And, you know, you're going to like some of them. You may not like all of them. So it's fun.
But they'll be over in a minute.
I was like, but it's right. Over in a minute. It's not long. Yeah.
For more information about that, scriptworks.org. Anything else you guys want to talk about locally other than your own thing?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I don't have anything. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of nosed down in my work right now.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine why. You open tomorrow night.
I was going to say you open tomorrow night. Yeah. That's why.
Dress rehearsal tonight.
Yep.
Good. Anything for you?
Wit is closing this weekend over Wit. At...
Cynthia Nixon was in that on Broadway.
She was. So was one Judith Light, too.
Running for governor.
I saw Judith Light in it. Judith Light just got an Emmy nomination for her...
For what?
For the Versace miniseries, which she was literally only in 2 episodes, and she was that powerful.
I so didn't want to watch that, so guess what? I didn't.
It was pretty, it was disturbing.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, so that's playing at Scottish Rite Theater through the rest of this weekend, scottishritetheater.org.
Okay, let's jump through Today in Theater History, because we're running out of time.
Today in Theater History?
Today in Theater History. 1922, Theone Aldridge was born.
That's a great name.
And she is a costume designer that's done, you name it, she's done it. But among others, she did A Chorus Line, one of your favorites.
Yes.
Annie, one of your favorites.
Yes.
Ballroom, one of your favorites.
Ballroom.
You don't know Ballroom?
It's not one of my favorites.
I don't know. La Cage aux Folles, one of your favorites.
Yes.
Okay, in 1983, that woman that was in the...
lady?
Shoot.
Who was that lady?
No, what was it called? Anyway, Cicely Tyson.
Oh,
I'm trying
yes.
to think of...
The trip to Bountiful
Pippin.
That's right.
And then also in 89, Love Letters was what opened with A.R. Gurney. That's the one where two stars sit on a desk and read love letters. The first week, do you know who was in the first week? You would probably know. You're smart.
I could see his
one
face.
One person has passed away.
Yeah, I could see.
And the other person played the president's wife on The West Wing.
Oh my God. But
John Rubenstein and Stockard Channing. Other pairs were George Segal and Dana Ivey, Timothy Hutton, Elizabeth McGovern, Jason Roberts, and Elaine Stritch.
Everybody's done it.
Et cetera, et cetera. Let's see. This is the anniversary of the death of Colleen Dewhurst.
Is it really? I just watched on... No. What was it that she was in? I forgot the name of the darn movie.
So the last thing I wanted to highlight here from Today in Theater History, and then we got to run, but Al Pacino did Huey, in which he directed himself.
Yes.
So I am not a fan of actors directing themselves. How do you feel, Mark Piquel?
I've done it once, and it was very difficult. I would never do it again.
Yeah, I just have an issue with it. Don't tell Ken Webster I said that.
Will not. Secret is ours.
I appreciate people that do it. I just... Yeah. Other birthdays, Dorothy Parker.
Really?
Valerie Harper.
Really?
And James Corden.
There's some good birthdays today.
There are.
Those are some good birthdays. Let's take a little break and come back and say goodbye, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. So what do we...
What's the ditty you shall play?
This is from... one of the Theona Aldridge's... what did it say it's come from? Is a house is not a home. From Promises, Promises.
Yes, Promises, Promises.
There is not a home.
Okay, we are. We have returned. I'm not saying we are back. We've returned.
We have returned. Here we are. For another minute.
With just enough time to say goodbye. That's goodbye. Our new theme song.
I say goodbye.
Tracy Schultz is in the house. Hello, Tracy Schultz.
Hello.
We thanked you on the air for covering for us last week. Thank you.
It was my pleasure, always.
I love that he's the fill-in co-host, the phantom co-host of Offstage and On the Air.
He is indeed. Well, it was fun to be back.
It was, Lisa.
Unfortunately, I'm gone a lot in September, or twice in September, and then I'm here for a while.
So long,
because I'm directing
farewell.
A little show called Fun Home.
Oh.
La la.
I thought you were going to start singing with me, but you didn't.
Auf Wiedersehen, goodbye.
Thank you.
Adieu.
I was going
adieu.
Sticking
to you. To you and you and you. Tracy Schultz. anyway, you can find us on the Twitter. You can find us on the Facebook. Go to offstageonair.com. You'll cut us right in your mailbox.
You get delivered each week. Shazam.
You can also get us on iTunes, so please leave us a message. Leave
like,
us a review.
Tell us how you love us, please.
Yeah, we want to get it.
Hello.
All right. So we're going to go out with, what
one
did
more
I choose?
Ditty?
Well, they're all kind of sad. This is also from Promises, Promises. Oh, that last one. Oh, no. You know what?
This is from.
Hold on. No, this is a different one. This is Good Night Is Not Goodbye.
From Ballroom.
Ballroom. Yes. Here it is. We'll see you next week, folks.
Au revoir.
The night is almost over. We've no more songs to spend. There's only time for one.
Well, we finished the show. It was a straight play, a combination of Edward Albee shows.
A mashup.
It was a mashup of Edward Albee and Eugene Ionesco. It was called The Rhinoceros Meets the Goat.
No.
Moo. Anyway, so we are we've gone backstage. We've left the stage door. We're down here by the dumpsters. We don't have our feet in puddles of unnamed liquid right now because it has not rained since 1927.
It's all right.
It's so it's okay. It's hot.
It's hot.
And joining us back here is Mark Pickell. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
You've been back here before.
I have. I've come back by the dumpster before.
It's lovely.
It's been a while.
It smells
it?
Better now.
Yeah, it has been a few months. Yeah,
it's because we put those air fresheners out here.
So that's true. That's right. And we got, and the rat traps are working, I think.
I go, yeah.
There you go. Well, cool. What new can you tell us? What's new?
Oh, I wish we had a camera again. No. What's new? Yeah,
so what's.
So let's just put you on the spot.
Yeah, I'll just go personal.
That's what we're here for.
Just balancing, you know, work-life kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I have two kids. I have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old who...
Oh, that's active times.
Yeah, so
what are their names?
Jeffrey and Grant.
Jeffrey and Grant. Shout out to Jeffrey and Grant.
Woo-woo!
Yeah, so they just started school. So, you know, just kind of like getting into the whole, like, it's a rude awakening.
How long does it take you to get back into your swing, Lee?
Oh my gosh, I swear it doesn't feel right until about November.
Right.
Because I work from home, my wife works from home, and so we don't have like a really hard, like, must get up, shower, eat to go to work, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's pretty loose in the mornings. So school's not loose and they want them to be there at a certain time.
That's true. Well, let's talk about that. So you, and we may have talked about this a little bit before, but so you, we know you as someone that runs Capital T, which is one of the best theater companies here
in
Austin.
So.
Well, it is. You guys do some consistently fine work.
Well, very kind.
So that's good. Not many people. It's the consistency that a lot of us don't have. So I think that's really good.
To produce.
But you also have a day job, in which you work out of your home.
Well, I mean, I kind of piece together a creative life. I think a lot of artists do. So I do run Capital T, and then I do design work outside of my company. Lights and set and stuff, and then also do a lot of consulting for schools, fine arts.
You do
related, yeah.
Like,
oh,
tell us what that. How does that manifest itself? What is it? What kind of consultation?
I do workshops for students. I do workshops for teachers fundamentally. Mm-hmm. So in services where teachers are trying to come up with new ideas to bring into the classroom, and then just working with students. teachers bring me in to, you know, give a day long workshop on whatever, you know, they want to focus on.
Really. Do you have a background in education, or are you just bringing your expertise as a theater professional?
I never meant to, but I do have a background. I taught high school for 5 years.
Oh.
And so I taught outside of Houston in Hempstead, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hempstead.
A little rural community.
Oh, I know Hempstead.
It's small over there.
Actually, I really only know it from growing up in Houston. We had the Hempstead Highway. I couldn't tell you. I'm assuming it went to Hempstead, but
eventually
that's about all I could
there,
tell.
Yeah.
And I think the name's, I don't even know what that road is called now.
I'm sure
it's
not
changed.
Called Hempstead
there
Highway.
There is Hempstead Highway.
Is it still called Hempstead Highway?
It runs kind of parallel right there to
So you did you teach theater in Hempstead?
I did. I taught theater and speech.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I never really intended to, but my high school teacher had said, he had told me, he said, hey, I told the superintendent that he was looking for somebody. I told him you'd come out and talk to him. And I was in Houston. I was working. I was acting in Houston at the time. And also I had a pretty sweet gig where I was a performing arts facility manager.
Uh-huh.
So it was really flexible. So I could still act in Houston
and then just
do the schedule and keep up the lights and stuff for this theater. Anyways, long story short, I went out there and he made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Cool.
And so I stayed and taught
You're
for
like,
five
Hempstead
years.
It is!
That's right. Hempstead
well, I'll tell you,
it is.
I think that's got to be, that's something I would love to do.
Yeah.
Just because I think there's, and I've talked to teachers that go, no, you really don't. but it seems like something that would be, or it could be quite rewarding.
It was very rewarding. And the kids, like I said, it was a very socioeconomically disadvantaged group, rural, and so you can make a big impact on
kids' three
lives.
Cheers for Hempstead. Is it Hempstead ISD?
It is, yeah.
Three cheers for them for having a theater program.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's
and
not
bringing
top
in
on
people that are, you know, not just bringing in,
quality
that
became,
have a
I think
background
I became a better director while I was there, and actually it was really hard for me to leave. The only thing that lured me away was my wife said, hey, well, let's move to Austin. You can start a theater company.
There you go.
And so that was about the only thing that you probably could have told me that I would have made
Left
me jump
for.
From that. Yeah.
When when did you start Capital T?
2006.
2006. And most people, when they think of Capital T, they think of Hyde Park Theater. There's a symbiosis there.
Yeah.
How did that marriage take place?
Space, looking for space.
No, I don't know anything about that.
nothing about it. Yeah. And so one of my college professors was Jim Fritzler, who was big in the scene here in Austin in the 80s. He since moved on to Nebraska.
Of course, but
he had like a really seminal production of Our Town that like it sounds like everybody who's anybody back in the 80s in Austin was in. And so when I approached him, I said, hey, I want to start a theater company. And he said, you need to talk to Ken. He runs Hyde Park Theater. And so I think Kathy, I don't know if Ken was in Our Town, but Kathy was. But anyways, got to meet Ken. We have a lot in common as far as taste and
I was
plays.
About to say, when you look at the work that Capital T does and you look at the work that Hyde Park does, they're very similar.
Yeah.
Relationships, you can tell you're just like a family related.
Yeah, so we get along, and I think he respects my work. I respect his, and you know, I make improvements to his theater and help kind of re-envision things. And I think he's been a great mentor. Early on, he was a great mentor. Yeah. You know, telling me what works, what doesn't work, where to spend your money, where not to spend your money. He knows what he's doing for sure. So there's a reason why he has his level of success too. So it was, I was really lucky to kind of have him especially in a producing point of view, because when you come in, you really don't, I don't know, you have an idea, you have like a play, I have some people, I'm passionate about it. And then you're missing is an audience.
Some costume. Yeah. What you're missing is an audience.
Yeah. And so figuring that out, I think, is really important. So,
where did you learn, or where did you get a passion for design work?
You know, that's really interesting. So originally, I have this big thing that I feel like people should be paid, right, for their work. Even if it's...
That's a novel concept.
I was like, it's a concept to...
even if it is, you know, obviously not market value, but I think there has to be something. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And so very early in CapT's days, you know, there just wasn't anything. And so I trained as a lighting designer in college. So I did lighting and acting mostly is what I did in college. And so anyways, early on, I just had to kind of make do. And so I just started doing it. Then I got other people involved, and I love having other collaborators that I feel like can really add to the equation, you know, that like Ia is amazing. She does things that I can never do, you know, and things like that. And so I learned a lot from them actually while I worked with them.
That's the way it's done.
Stole a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And so now I just have, now I feel like unless it's somebody like Ia, or I really love Lisa Lerada as well, or Paul Davis was here for a while. He moved on to Houston. But you know, now I just feel like I know what I want and mm-hmm. I know how to achieve that. And so I just kind of set currently that's what I'm doing. Right. So
cool.
And people ask me too. And so I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm doing something right because people, you know, approach me and say, hey, we'd like you to design. And so I never really set out to be a scenic designer. But I do think as a director, I think I have an understanding of space. I think that's probably my strength.
You have something you can see. A lot of times designers design with just the design and forget the show or the other pieces. And when you have an insight to all of those other elements, it's got to make you even more desirable to work with.
The downside, certainly when you're doing it yourself, is like directing yourself. I mean, there's work. It's just work. There's work that goes into acting. There's work that goes into directing. There's work that goes into scene design. It's just like today, you know, we open tomorrow and I have my little list that I would love for it to be somebody else's
list. It'd
be nice
for you to play director at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I mean, there's pluses and minuses because you also lose the collaborative. So
yes.
you're losing that somebody else's opinion when you do it yourself.
Somebody else brings something in.
And in terms of directing yourself, I just think it's very difficult. I understand people that direct themselves on film and video. That mm-hmm. makes sense because you can see it and make changes.
To it, yeah. You can watch Jilly walk away. Yeah.
But, you know, unless you have some sort of superpower, which I, by the way, do, you can't see yourself. Like, I could never direct myself.
I did it once.
Did you?
I did it once only because, you know, talking about casting earlier, I just couldn't find what I wanted for a character. And it was definitely my type, my range. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, I'll just do it. I've been doing it in we had started rehearsals even.
Did you bring someone else in as an eye? It's just somebody else.
Yeah. Well, we
objectively say, hey,
it was a lie of the mind. And so people had, it was, you know, that's a long play and mm-hmm. it's episodic. Well, not episodic, but it takes place in two different homes. And so usually I would just have the other actors, you know, whoever wasn't on stage at that time could, you know.
Give me some notes.
Give me some notes, yeah. But it was tough. I forgot how much work acting is, actually. As a director, you get to, like, come in and respond to things. I mean, all your preparation is usually done before you start the rehearsal process. And then most of the work is just responding to what's happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, acting, you know, there's the whole memorizing of lines and thinking about things before you come on stage, you know. And
yeah.
So, yeah. I find it, I would never do it again.
I would because it can be fun, but I also sort of, I think I understand my limitations. Like, if you want someone to break character, put me in your show. Especially if it's a comedy. Like,
why don't you just write a show about breaking character?
I could do Noises Off, perhaps.
There you go.
But I'd have to do it for real. It's like I couldn't play the characters.
Or the play that goes wrong.
So
you go out on tour with the play that goes wrong right now.
I'd love to do that. I was looking at them and see if they needed a stage manager. I would go on the road with them. Sounds like fun.
I didn't know you were a stage manager.
That's my background. I moved to New York in the 70s to be a performer like everybody else. And I needed an equity card. And I knew people that got their equity card stage managing mm-hmm. children's theater mostly. And so I sat down on a typewriter. I read a book called The Stage Manager's Handbook by Burt Grover. And
I'm done.
And I wrote a resume, completely false. And I got a job immediately. And I quit my first job right before they were going to fire me. I made a lot of mistakes on that show, or in those shows. It was a repertory theater. But that then taught me a lot of lessons. And I fortunately had the aptitude for it. So that's what I did.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Stage manager. And that's what I'm doing now when I go on the road. When I leave, I'm stage managing industrial shows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
I think that's what you've been doing right now.
That's what I'm doing now.
That's what you've been doing lately.
So what's in the future for Mark Pakel? Are you going to stay in Austin? You have two kids. Are y'all going to retire here?
Yeah, I don't, you know, originally when I started CAPT, it was actually, you know, that was a while back. And originally it was just kind of an idea to get some professional credits and understand producing and starting a theater company. And then moving on to grad school was originally my kind of concept. And I just realized at some point I found an audience, people liked my work, and
mind is something here.
Well, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It was just like, I don't know if the grass is greener elsewhere or not. Mm-hmm. So